Let's jump into the news this week. First thing up is I think it's a big Apple acquisition, just price-wise, $100 million or in that ballpark. And this is Apple buying the company Next VR. And we reported on this first, we were first to break this story back in April, on April 4th. And on March 14th, the deal closed and Apple confirmed to Bloomberg that they did buy the company. And Next VR is this company that is like, you, if you have like Oculus or whatever type of VR headset, then you can stream live sports like the NBA. You can stream things like concerts, music events, performances. I think UFC fighting was one of the things. And on the day that the deal closed, the website was replaced with, we're going in a new direction. You know, thanks for, you know, being a customer, but it was like the service was gone. And this was a month and a half after our first report. And what I'd heard internally is that they were calling the acquiring company Atom, A-T-O-M. And it was that some people were going to Atom and some were not. And so the whole time it was sort of very secretive, but Apple finally confirmed the deal. And, yeah, it's just money wise. It is a lot of money. I'm not sure that.
So they did like virtual reality, like sporting events. Is that?
Yeah. And so it was VR, which is not, I mean, it was like, you know, wear a headset on your face kind of thing and you can't see through. And like Apple whole thing is about AR and there's, you know, there's stuff we'll talk about with the glasses and AR later in the show. But it seems to be that they don't take very many people from Next VR. They do take some, you know, founders and engineers, but they had a big layoff, about a year and a half ago when they were trying to find more investors. And I think it was their third round of investing and they didn't find anyone to invest.
Yeah. The company was not doing very well.
Yeah. So they shed a lot of staff then. And then this started in April when Apple was in talks to buy them. So this was like when things were getting pretty final, you know, actually. So then a number of people won't go on to Apple, but some will. And those are like the founders and some of the key engineers. And it seems to be that, you know, like part of this has got to be about the virtual reality stuff. But that's mainly like, you know, you're streaming an event and you're making it, you know, like what is it, stereoscopic or however, and so you can see your face. But that's doesn't seem to be their key thing. It seems to be that they've got a whole, you know, portfolio of patents that could be relatable to AR, sure, you know, in the future. Or just, it also reminded me of like whenever Disney bought the company that MLB used for streaming baseball, and they used that as the back end for like Disney Plus, right? And so they've got experience streaming high volume, you know, live events, which is different than what they do with Apple TV Plus. You know, it's all on demand. And so maybe there's something in their portfolio of patents, you know, mixed with the talent that makes this worth, you know, around $100 million for Apple.
Yeah, like it's, so it does seem quite heavily just like a licensed intellectual property kind of pickup, right?
Yeah.
And like AR and VR headsets are obviously interlinked, but they are different because the virtual reality headsets need to have more, they can be lower resolution, but they have to have more field of view because they need to, you need to cover more to actually fill the whole world. Whereas with an AR headset, you need to have, you don't necessarily need it to cover the whole, you know, vision, your everything your eye can see. But as long as the stuff that is being overlaid is like in the front, you know, 60% or whatever, that's good enough. But it needs to be higher resolution, higher frame rate, so that it actually blends in well with the real world, right? Because on like a virtual reality game, you can have, you know, you can almost have a 2D or very blocky 3D game that's just in 3D in your head with a headset on it, and your brain can work with that. But if you put, you know, a 3D, like an untextured block in an AR experience, it looks kind of stupid because your brain immediately separates it from the real stuff and it doesn't blend in. That's why Apple does so much stuff with their AR kit stuff where you have like the synthesized lighting, and like even when you put an object in the room from those things down on the websites, it's kind of guessing where the light sources are coming in and overlaying them on the objects to make it look like it's actually in the environment. And so it definitely seems like Next VR would have plenty of stuff that could apply to augmented reality, even though they are like primarily a, you know, a full VR company. Plus, we don't actually know. Maybe Apple's looking at some kind of headset project in the future where, you know, AR and VR are much more one and the same, right? And so, it, like, ideally, you could have one headset that could do both, right? Like, and maybe this isn't feasible in the short term, but longer term down the road, and that's where Apple comes in, pick up the technology, get the experience. They're obviously working on their AR glasses project, and then see where it takes them.
Yeah, and the way I saw that the story had developed from early April to mid-May is that I've been following, you know, in TweetDeck, every tweet with Apple and XVR, which has mostly just been coverage of the story. But there was one person who was complaining that that Apple messed up. They broke their Oculus because they no longer could stream live sports.
They stopped supporting the development kit stuff.
Yeah, so I was like...
Yeah, like it's rare for an Apple acquisition to go ahead and they keep the existing stack alive.
Right.
Like it does have... Like Shazam, that's what I meant to say. Shazam obviously is one where they have exceptionally actually kept like the Android app running, the phone app running, even their partnership with that, you know, was it Shazam, Beat Shazam, that TV show thing? That's still active. So they've kind of kept Shazam, you know, relatively untouched. But most other acquisitions they make, you know, they shutter the stuff that isn't directly related to their business.
Yeah.
Like what we saw recently with Dark Sky, right? Where everyone was mad because they were shutting the Android app.
Yeah, we can say for sure that we're not going to see the next VR stuff be like what gets turned into News Plus, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they keep, what was the service called, Alive?
Texture.
Texture, right.
Yeah. Like the next VR, like video entertainment stuff, some people were like, oh, no, it must have something to do with Apple TV Plus, and they're going to do like 3D video, you know, not necessarily.
I mean, there is the talk of like a live or not live but on demand fitness stuff, but that they have the technology for that already. It seems to be
this would have to be in the realm of some kind of like virtual reality, augmented reality stuff, right? And maybe it's a mixture. It's probably just a mixture of patents, intellectual property, and then, you know, some talent as well that's coming along for the ride to help them get the AR glasses project over the line.
Yeah, for the folks who didn't make it onto Apple, they get to keep their laptops. That's something I've heard. So.
Well,
I don't know. I hope they're good laptops.
Hopefully they're a decent laptop.
Yeah. But I mean, in reality, I think it was 40%
of
them.
They get to keep their butterfly keyboards.
Yeah.
They're thrilled.
It was 40% of the staff who were caught in January 2019. So in reality, there's not a whole lot of people left. It was a 20-person company, I think. So, and only.
And I think the sale price, although it's like for $100 million, that's decent on the size of Apple's acquisitions. Because, you know, even Apple's biggest ever acquisition was a $3 billion purchase of Beats Electronics and Beats Music. And then below that, you've kind of got the $1 billion acquisition of the Intel modem business. That was quite recent. And then you've got the time that, you know, Apple was when Apple bought Next, right? Like they're going way, way back. But if you look beyond that, you know, most of their acquisitions are not below $100 million. So this is sizable in terms of like Apple's acquisition budgets normally. But if you actually look at what was invested into the company, like I think TechCrunch said that investors VC investors had put like 150 200 million into the company, so this is, you know, financially a loss for the business, if you see what I mean.
So it
looks like an exit of scraps rather than like an exit of success, if you know what I
mean. Right. And the $100 million is an estimate, because it could be higher than that by, you know, about $20 million. It could be lower than that by about $20 million, so
yeah,
you know, which would put it kind of average. So all right, let's talk about WWDC and how that will go. This is some new details about what we expect from WWDC in terms of the presentation.
Last week we were like chatting about this, weren't we? Like speculating, are they going to do like a keynote on the stage? Are they going to do, you know, at home pre-recorded videos, kind of like what we saw Craig Federighi do for the iPad Pro Magic Keyboard thing, where for press they did the little video inside of Infinite Loop, inside of Apple Park, and, you know, shot that little sequence. Happened in the last 7 days is Apple was touting a partnership with ABC where their shows were getting recorded on, like for American Idol, it was getting recorded on iPhone 11 Pro rigs at home. And of course, you know, Apple's playing this up. It's almost like a free ad campaign, right? And they were calling it, you know, broadcast quality video. Blah, 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 blah. And Mark Gurman from Bloomberg said, oh, now you know how Apple engineers are recording their sessions. And he also had a follow-on report which said that indeed some Apple engineers are recording their sessions just using iPhones at home. So that at least covers some portion of the WWDC content pool, right? So the sessions which normally get held at on the conference center in on site, and you know they schedule them for a time in the week, and everyone goes and sits down and watches it, and then that gets recorded and uploaded and streamed. It seems like at least those will be basically just recorded in the homes of the engineers that are working on the frameworks, and they'll just get published. And so that it seems unlikely they're going to be live in any capacity. That's obviously, but the sessions are secondary to, you know, the general like product keynote, which generally works differently because that gets the main stage, it gets all the press, it gets all the buzz, and obviously the attention from all the executives. So we still don't know for sure how they're going to do that, but you could probably see that if, you know, engineers are doing video recording from home, then there's going to be at least sequences of home shot video as well in the WWDC.
They play a lot of videos in the keynote anyway, right?
Like, exactly. But what I think what you might have is maybe you have like, you know, Tim introducing either in the Steve Jobs Theater or not, and then maybe passing off and saying, and now we'll turn to Craig for the iOS 14 reveal, and then you have a video recorded by Craig maybe in his house of the videos of his section. You see what I mean?
Take it to Craig's house. Yeah.
Take it to Craig's house. Yeah.
Built right in.
I think it would be weird if they don't have any. I mean, it's unprecedented times, right? So people will just have to accept whatever they get around to doing, right? And what's possible, and given, you know, safety and everything. But I think it would be strange if they have no like stage presence at all. It would I think they can do some sort of like MC introduction, right? Get Cook on stage, do a little like hello, welcome, blah, 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 and here's, and then they'll pass it along. Because, you know, in the old days, Jobs would just run a 2-hour keynote on his own. Like,
yeah.
If you want social distancing, you just get one person to do the whole thing, right? Sure. And maybe Cook could do that, maybe not. We'll have to see. I just think it would be very, very strange if it was literally like Nintendo Direct style, where they don't have a stage of any description, and it's literally just like, here's a video, here's another video, here's another video, here's another video, goodbye. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. there was a period, I think it was around like 2014 or so, yeah, that the keynotes got to be like very movie, like video heavy. Like it was like, instead of like turning to developers and on stage to do demos, like turning to a video, here's on the video, you know, so it won't be too off the usual pattern. And then iPad Pro stuff with the Magic Keyboard and battery drain. What's going on there?
Yeah. So since the Magic Keyboard came out, but it's been, you know, increasing in number as everyone's getting their hands on the thing and playing about with it and noticing like longer term experiences, there's been, I wouldn't say everybody, kind of like how, you know, the Apple Watch Series 5 had battery problems at the gate for some people, but it didn't affect everyone. This seems to be like, I don't know, it's certainly not as the majority, but it's probably like, you know, 5-10% of, based on, that's an estimate, right? But it seems like some people are having big problems with their Magic Keyboard draining the battery life of their iPad Pro, because obviously the Magic Keyboard does not have its own internal battery. It just charges through the smart connector on the iPad Pro, which means it's using the internal battery of the iPad. And, you know, ahead of this product coming out, we were discussing like the backlight on the keyboard, the battery impact, and it will have some difference, right? But you wouldn't expect it to be that big, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a Bluetooth keyboard and a trackpad without Bluetooth. And then you've got one light that lights up the keyboard, whereas you've got the iPad, which has to, you know, run all the processes, run that real power and beautiful screen and all the Retina display pixels and, you know, and all of that stuff. So we would expect a small battery life impact, but what people are seeing here is like, what, 3 times their smart keyboard folio, right? Mm. So like pretty big difference, and basically cutting the 10-hour battery life of the iPad in half, even when you're doing very light things, just like typing or browsing the web, right? And some people even report that their iPad's battery life is getting drained when it's just sitting inside the Magic Keyboard case without even being used. Mm-hmm. So it shouldn't be using any power, and yet they come, you know, 3 hours later to pick it up and it's lost 20% battery.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've experienced this at all.
Yeah, I've not noticed during use because, you know, I'm using it, I guess, but I've definitely picked up the iPad when it's in the smart Magic Keyboard case, and it's dead like over a weekend. So if I leave it on like a Friday, usually the iPad just like sips battery and it barely does anything, you know, and it's going to be like within a few percent points of where I left it. And now it's common.
Yeah, I mean, in general, an iPad's meant to have standby life of like a month.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Even
yeah.
Back to the original, it's like 30-day standby time. Mm-hmm. And in general, that, you know, you can go to an iPad, go to it a week later and it'll have lost like 2% battery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I've certainly noticed that if you just have it on your desk and it's closed, then it will, over the weekend, be dead. Yeah. And so
that's quite a big difference, right?
Yeah.
With and without.
Yeah. And I'm
and you used the smart keyboard before, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And you didn't have the same problem.
No. Yeah, and it certainly seems like it's something that can be fixed in firmware. You know, I've seen some people are sending them in for, you know, returns and getting exchange units and everything. And I'm not sure. I don't think I'd go that route. It feels like something that could be fixed in firmware. Yeah.
Yeah, like we don't know yet, and
like in, the Apple Watch. You know,
Exactly. Just it's very similar to the watch situation where we're like, we think it can be fixed in software, but you know, Apple doesn't say anything. And even with the watch, like Apple never really released an update that said we fixed the battery.
Never acknowledged it.
It just kind of happened, and we're like, okay, I guess it's done now. Yeah. But with this keyboard thing, in my story, I linked to the iPad Insight blog, who had a problem with their Magic Keyboard, and they did go through the route of hardware replacement. Mm-hmm. And for them, it did make a difference. For other people, not so much. But again, even with getting your hardware swapped out, you don't know if it's really the fault of the hardware itself, or you just got lucky and then suddenly it's not happening anymore. Yeah. Maybe it's to do with a bit of dust on the connector. One problem when I tweeted about this that seemed to get like a lot of support is that just in general, the backlight of the keyboard is staying on for a long time after the iPad screen turns off. So even when the iPad's not in use, the backlight of the keyboard is just staying on for a long time, even when it's closed. Mm-hmm. And obviously that is going to use power up if you just leave it for a while. So that is one problem on its own, which again could be a mixture of hardware or software that would cause, you know, battery life impact on its own. But I think this is kind of like a combination of a few different factors that we haven't quite nailed down yet. And yes, the backlight should turn off when it's not in use, but there's also probably that doesn't fully explain it being dead in a weekend, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I've reached the point with my smart keyboard, my Magic Keyboard, I'll never get used to that because it makes no sense.
I don't like the magic like prefix on any time they use it. Like it just sounds a bit odd.
And it's yeah, it's a whole thing.
And now the Magic Keyboard means like four different things:
case, trackpad,
depending on
stand,
which device you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm at the point now where I'm, you know, the first couple of weeks I was using it like when I didn't need to, but I was just like, you know, wanting to use it and get the experience with it. And now I'm at the point where I'm cool with taking it off and leaving it at home and like taking the iPad out of the house and just using the tablet part of it. And I'm getting to the natural part of how, you know, one would use it. And it seems to be that like if I were to make a trip without my MacBook, I would 100% bring the Magic Keyboard because then I've got the closest experience to the laptop without carrying the laptop. And if I need it, you know, or I've got, you know, and I've got a stand for the, you know, a nightstand, and you know, it's wonderful. But I don't even keep the iPad in it all the time now. I'm at the point. I don't keep it like open and connected to a cable yet. I might get to that point, probably actually pretty soon. Because that was what we talked about before it came out. Was like, you know, this is like a docking station, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And if you, as long as you have it open and, you know, ready, it's just that, you know, for me right now, I haven't dedicated a place to do that. And so I just keep it folded up and like toss aside when I'm not using it, you know? But then I'm also like finding chargers when I need them. But yeah, that's probably why I haven't noticed the issue as much either, is because I'm using it kind of as needed versus like all the time for myself.
So when you like just take it out with you or whatever you say on occasion without it being in the case, are you not like worried about dropping the iPad when it's like bare? You see what I mean?
I'm not sure that it would make a big difference in the Magic Keyboard, you know. I do have I'm still using the Moshi iVisor screen protector over the iPad.
Okay.
And that thing is getting like beat up. Like it's getting like scratches in it. Which is good. Like it's not an expensive accessory and I can replace it if I need to. But it tells me that I'm benefiting from that, not the iPad getting scratched up, you know, terribly. The back of the iPad, I don't really care so much about. I don't have any protection on that. But just having the iPad in no case, it's either in my hand or from like, if I leave it in the car, I put it between the seat and the center console. And, if I had the screen exposed without the iVisor, I wouldn't do that. Cause that would just be scratch it every time.
Just get dirty, even if it's not getting scratched.
Yeah. But in this case, I feel like I've got the front coverage I need and the back coverage I don't care about because it isn't glass or anything.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that is one thing where they could, like, you know, either Apple or a third party, maybe Logitech, could make like an actual Magic Keyboard stand which could actually support kind of like the old, you know, where you'd have the smart cover and then the smart case. Like,
yeah.
You'd have the iPad always in the smart case part of it, so it just covers the back plate, right? And then when you bring it home, it can just like snap onto this stand, which you can use, you know, when it's just sitting there. And then, like, the Magic Keyboard gets close to being a stand, but not 100% the way, because, you know, primarily it's designed to be a full case. It's not just a docking station stand thing. Mm-hmm. But I think a stand accessory in that style with the magnetic release and the magnetic snap would actually be really good.
Yeah. And the only thing stopping me from doing what we talked about before, just having it be in one place charging, is that I've got to pick the place, you know, whether it's,
yeah.
I mean, it's really good on the nightside tape, like bedside table, but I don't like to use technology as much. I just go to sleep, you know? So it's not, but it looks really cool. Like, okay, here's a whole panel of, like, you know, all the HomeKit accessories and, you know, email and messages and whatever you want to check in on. But I just tend to just get out of bed and, you know, not do it there. So I'll probably keep it in the office and just have that be like, this is where it is. And if I want to take it away, then to put the iPad in it, unplug it, and, you know, go on with it.
Thanks to our friends at Smile Software for sponsoring Happy Hour. Save time typing and boost your productivity with Text Expander. Text Expander helps you manage everything that you type repetitively. Email addresses, phone numbers, common message replies, and so much more. You can turn the things you type into reusable snippets to access them time and time again. Your snippets can be simple, like a phone number, or something more complicated, like a long form with fill-in fields and automatically calculated dates. Text Expander works everywhere you type, from word processors to email apps, messaging, spreadsheets, and the web. Everywhere you'd expect. Text Expander goes beyond simple find and replace, and you can customize your reusable snippets with fill-in fields and pop-up lists. For instance, you could stamp out an invoice with easily editable fields to change only the bits that need to be customized for each individual. And if you've ever written something twice, there's a good chance you could work smarter and use a Text Expander snippet instead. It's not just about automating repeat work. Reusing snippets ensures consistency in your messaging. And Text Expander is available for macOS, iPhone, iPad, Windows, and Chrome. And Smile is running webinars every month to help you get up to speed and make the most out of Text Expander. And there's online tutorials aimed at beginner, advanced, and team levels. Again, unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast. Thanks to Pillow for sponsoring the show. Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep is as easy as wearing it to bed, and Pillow will track and analyze your sleep patterns automatically. One of Pillow's most loved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session, and you can compare your sleep quality with your weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and many more health metrics to discover how they might be affecting how you sleep. You can enable the recording mode, and Pillow will save the sounds that you make during sleep, from sleep talking to sleep apnea, snoring, and other unexpected noises that might be affecting how you sleep. You can use the recording to find out, and a lot of users have been surprised by the results. And of course, Pillow is very privacy-minded. All of your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on your device. And when it syncs with iCloud, it's using end-to-end encryption. Pillow doesn't have user accounts, so you can use it anonymously, and it won't collect or send your personal data anywhere else. Naps boost your focus, creativity, and overall well-being. And if you're working from home, you can also take naps using Pillow's power nap modes. If you need an alarm, Pillow can wake you up using your iPhone, watch, or iPad. And with watchOS 6, Pillow uses the new extended runtime features to minimize battery consumption. Pillow is available on the App Store today for iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. Discover all of Pillow's features at naybox.com/pillow. That's naybox.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. Our thanks to Pillow for their support of Happy Hour.
All right, and then the update to Logic Pro 10, which is version 10.5 now, right?
Yes.
And when they do a point solid number update, like 0.4, 0.5, that's when it's like a major release because they're on version 10.4 forever.
Yeah, and like macOS versions.
Indeed. And so this is one of those big versions for Apple. The big thing is that you've got live loops like on the iPad version
of GarageBand, yeah.
Of GarageBand, right. And they even heavily promote using the Logic Remote app, which works with GarageBand or Logic on the Mac. And that's an iPad app where you see like, you know, your iPad becomes like a touch control for Logic on the Mac or GarageBand on the Mac. And because the live loops as we know them on GarageBand for iOS, they're very touch interactive. So they say that's the best way to use them. There's also a bunch of stuff with electronic, you know, it's all around like electronic music. And then there's some like super legacy stuff that's been updated for the first time in like, you know, a decade or so. So it's a big update. Is there anything that stands out to you in the update besides all that stuff?
Yeah, obviously, this is the thing that we spoke about probably about a month ago now, because a screenshot of it randomly appeared on the MacBook website. Do you remember?
Yes.
Like, there was just a picture of Logic with the live loops. And we're like, wait a second, the live loops are only in GarageBand. And now, you know, basically a month on, suddenly this update comes out. So that's answered that mystery. We'll have to wait and see whether there is a Logic for iPad in development of some description. Like, doesn't seem like it. But, well, you know, maybe. I mean, the Logic Remote has some of the controls on there. Like, it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to just combine GarageBand and Logic Remote together, right? To have, like, a mini Logic. But that kind of is what GarageBand is now, I guess, if you see what I mean.
Hmm.
This is just a nice update for people that are really into, like, sound design and stuff, because I think Logic hadn't had a big update in a while, and this one, they called it the biggest update ever.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cool things just in it is if you're just looking for like inspiration, one of their like demo projects is the Billie Eilish song Ocean Eyes.
Cool.
So the producer of that song always uses Logic, and they gave him like this version in advance, and they were chatting about it, and they came to an arrangement where like the full production, so like the, you know, the 200 track project of the original song is just now available. So if you have Logic, you can just go and see it and see what and learn from it and look at it and play around with it and mess about with it, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. I did one of those today at Apple Sessions, back when Apple stores were open. More coming open mm-hmm. now. But back when they were safely open. And it was a remix session on an iPad of a Taylor Swift song. And I had a blast with that. I mean, you just had like the stems from the song and you could arrange them however and do whatever effects. And they encouraged you to do things that I didn't want to do, because like it was more like silly than, you know, professional. But I found like if I had access to those stems, you know, on that touch interface, like it was really good. I was in the zone. I was also the only person doing it in a whole store in Texas. You know,
oh, yeah.
It was meant to be like over the microphone. It was awkward, but that's today at Apple. I found it to be very enjoyable.
But that's cool. Another big Logic Pro update that is, again, free for existing customers, or $200 if you haven't bought before.
Yep. And they've got the 90-day free trial right now, which is different than usual. I guess usually it's either nothing or 30 days. I forget which. But
yeah, I think they gave you 30-day trial.
Yeah.
So you can. So now you can get 3-month trial.
And that's enough to final cut. Put together an EP, you know, like learn the ropes and release it. We use Logic for the podcast audio edit. And so I guess.
But I don't think you're quite the target market for the step sequencer or the drum.
I don't know. We'll see what comes out this week. No. All right, let's talk about HomePod stuff, right? This is what's going on with HomePod? Let's see.
You mean the HeadPods?
I don't. That's even better. HomePods in your head. Yeah, man. Why not?
Well, I mean, you spoke the other week about them rebranding the HomePod. I don't think they're quite going to rebrand it into their over-ear headphones.
Let's talk about HeadPod. HeadPods will not be the name, by the way. And it's like pretty solid that it's going to be AirPods something, AirPods modifier. Let's discuss that.
Yeah. Like, John Prosser this week said, according to his sources, that it's going to be called AirPod Studio, which I think was a name that we like raised at some point. Cause
I have no idea.
I can't remember. Well, I mean, they were a Beats Studio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it follows the logic if you want to go along that way. And AirPods Studio sounds all right, and it does convey the fact that these are like over ear headphones. Pros already taken, and if they did want to rebrand the HomePod at the same time, like because you mentioned the problem before where like the normal HomePod is currently the big one. If they bring out the smaller one, you don't really want to call that a mini. Mm-hmm. Then they could have the HomePod just be rebranded the small one, and then have HomePod Studio, which is the ones we know today, the big standalone thing.
Which makes sense.
AirPod Studio is a fine name. We'll have to see if that plays out. The bigger news from this week is a report from our colleague Felipe Esposito, mm-hmm. who was looking into the code, and he found some new features about the AirPods Studio that hadn't been previously reported. We discussed before how Bloomberg said they were going to be like interchangeable or modular, so you could have it either be made of leather or you could have like a more sporty plastic rubbery one. And we'd kind of all been assuming that one of the things that they would do to differentiate from the Beats line is to add the AirPod style like automatic pausing. So when you wear them, you take them off, it does that. And Felipe's found evidence of that. Whereas the AirPods rely on like ear detection, the AirPods Studio are going to use head and neck sensors to know what to do. So mm-hmm. if it's on your neck, it will go into like the low power state. Mm-hmm. So it can save battery life, but not completely turn off. And so it can just kind of sit in the low power state. So then if you do put them back on your head, it can very quickly wake up and actually play music. And then it will use the head sensors to know if it needs to pause or unpause the music, essentially.
Yeah. And this is different than what they did with bringing like more AirPods like features to the Solo headphones, the Beats mm-hmm. Solo headphones, because the Solo Pros, they use there's no proximity sensor for are you wearing them or not, and where are they, presumably to keep costs down and save something for the AirPods Studio. It's that they play when they're on, but they use the folding mechanism. So if you unfold them, they power on if they have battery. And if you fold them, they go into sleep mode. And there's no pause, unpause like you get with AirPods. And that's kind of a distinct feature for AirPods. It's like if you take AirPods out, they pause. If you have them out for a long time, they go to sleep, you know, and you put them in the case of charge. In this case, it's if you're wearing them on your head, you probably do get that auto play, auto resume, you know, we just take them on and off, but you don't get from studios. And for me, I think I mentioned this in my review, or at least on the podcast when we discussed it, Beats Solo Pro. For me, folding them is not a routine thing. And for my daughter who uses them now, she never folds them. I tell her like to turn them off and save your battery, fold them, and that's how you do it. And I think that's just not a thing that you always do with headphones. So I'll see.
Yeah, but you fold them when you take them off and put them down. But if you're just if they're just around your neck, you just let them hang there, right? You don't going to fold them up, really.
I think folding is as rare as like putting them in their case and traveling with them. And in many cases, people don't even do that part. Like I don't have a habit of doing that either. I just like put them in the bag because they're pretty sturdy. Yeah, these days. And so what I'll see with her behavior is that the Solo Pros will be like on, you know, a table with a little white light on until they die. You know, and I'll go behind her and fold them, but like it's not sophisticated, really. Like, yeah. It's clever, whereas but it's not
if
natural.
If you had the head sensor stuff, it'd be better.
Yeah.
Then you just take them off and they pause or they go to sleep.
Yeah. And this is, you know, important because it is the first time we've seen, you know, ear detection and neck detection being a different state. So these are more thought out, which will probably explain the higher price than something you've seen from Beats yet, you know, through Apple.
Yeah, and then there's another sensor in here that Felipe talks about, which is about mono, that stereo sound, right? So he says that the AirPods Studio will be able to detect which is the left ear and which is the right ear, regardless of which way you put them on, and therefore automatically be able to channel the right noise to the right ear. Because normally, on an over-ear pair of headphones, they have a little L written on like the left-hand cup. And so you're meant to like look at the headphones, see where the L is, put that one on that side, put that one on the other side. And you have to, you know, you have to do that every single time. And it's just one of those little conveniences that it's like, well, if the headphones themselves were smart enough to know which way they'd gone on, then you wouldn't have this problem. And so you can't be in a situation where you put your headphones on and then suddenly stereo sound that is meant to be coming in the right hand side is coming into your left ear, mm-hmm. and vice versa.
Yeah, which is a very small thing, but something that you can see Apple wanting to solve with over ear headphones and using Apple, you know, as the brand for that, because it's a premium feature rather than Beats.
And I mean, if you look at AirPods in general, like they go wireless and then they add like, you know, five little features that on their own are kind of insignificant. But when you put them all together, it kind of adds into a nice premium, you know, headphones experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're just rolling out the same playbook. And these features are what's going to set them apart from the Beats line. And like, I do think they could literally sell... They could almost sell the same product that Beats sells just with an Apple logo on it, and they could still get away with it, right? Because people just treat them very differently as brands, and the straight connection between Apple and Beats is not well defined in the general public's mind. Like, a lot of people don't even realize that Apple owns Beats, right? But they only really need like one or two things to distinguish these products. And, you know, if you have ear detection, if you have auto pause, and then you have the channels, and then you have the modularity, you've basically got enough to then have the separate line for
very distinctive, right?
Ear headphones. Yeah, it's distinct enough at that point.
Yeah, those could be like, you know, that could be like 5 years of changes each year for a Beats product, whereas without like doing it this way, it's like this is one whole other category of things.
Yeah, that's the other thing they could do, is release it all at once into the AirPods headphones, and then slowly over time add those features back into the Beats lines, right? Because mm-hmm. the Beats lines aren't going to sit, you know, on an infinite timescale forever, just having to unfold and unfold them. Eventually, they get what the, you know, the premier Apple headphones will have, and so it will just like, you know, slowly trickle down the line in that way,
like with AirPods.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Clean My Mac X is an all-in-one cleaning and optimizing software solution for your Mac. It's a single package that combines the most useful features for spring cleaning your computer. You can scan for outdated junk files and easily work out what is using up all your valuable hard drive space. It makes a visual virtual map of how your storage is distributed across all your files and folders. And you can easily declutter old cache files, logs, mail attachments that you no longer need, and so much more. Clean My Mac X detects it all, and you could potentially save gigabytes of space with a single click. Because unfortunately, when you remove a program on the Mac, often it leaves around little preference files or caches that, you know, your computer just no longer uses or needs. And there really isn't a good way to clean that craft out using built-in macOS features. And that's where Clean My Mac X comes to the rescue. It's designed to be super easy to use. The app will show you step-by-step explanations for every component, and you can be fully confident in the tweaks it's making. It also features a beautiful system report menu, a dashboard of stats like free space, CPU load, used RAM, and other essentials. It can offer a sneak peek at the state of your entire system. To get the app, visit macpaw.com/podcast to download Clean My Mac X today, and use coupon code HAPPYHOUR, or one word, happy hour, to receive 5% off your purchase. Upon visiting macpaw.com/podcast, click the buy now button and then scroll to the bottom of the screen to enter the code before completing your purchase. Clean My Mac X is also newly available in the Mac App Store. Again, that's macpaw.com/podcast, coupon code happy hour. Thanks to MacPaw and Clean My Mac X for sponsoring Happy Hour. Thanks to Bitrise for sponsoring this week's episode of Happy Hour. If you're an app developer, Bitrise offers iOS continuous integration and delivery that lets you build better applications faster. Bitrise includes a variety of iOS-specific solutions, automatic code signing, support for the latest Xcode versions, virtual machines, and so much more. Bitrise offers more than 300 integrations to easily connect the processes and services that you use in your mobile development workflow. Setup becomes a breeze, and maintenance is drastically reduced, saving you both time and money. There's also out-of-the-box support for the major cross-platform frameworks that are used to create iOS apps, as well as automatic workflow configuration for iPhone and iPad deployment. Automate your tests for higher quality apps. Bitrise can also save you time by automating releases using continuous integration. You can automatically send your App Store signed apps to the App Store, deploy to third parties, and deploy for testing. Security is a priority of Bitrise, so you can sit back and relax knowing that your data is safe. And Bitrise is already used by the world's most productive mobile teams, so why not add it to your own development workflow? Sign up for free at bitrise.io and learn more in the link in the show notes. That's bitrise.io, bitrise.io. Our thanks to Bitrise for supporting 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
Yep, and then finally with Beats, there seems to be a revision coming because we're coming up on the 1 year time frame for Power Beats Pro. I was looking at, you know, how Photos like shows you pictures and memories. I had one served to me that was me trying, like going on a run and trying out the Power Beats Pro right before they came out. And that was so much fun. So just a reminder, like we're getting to that 1 year point. And, what seems to be coming this time around is probably the same product again, just with new colors. And the colors that were revealed this week, not announced, but just sort of revealed, is cloud pink glacier blue, lava red, and spring yellow. And that would add on to what was originally just black because they couldn't release the other colors in time. And then it was like, a dark green, dark blue, and a sort of like off-white color. So
it doesn't seem like there's going to be, like, it almost could be a silent revision, right? Just with new colors. Like, it doesn't seem like there's going to be any new features or changes to the actual.
If they got the transparency, the audio pass through feature, that would be a big deal. If they got active noise cancellation, that'd be a big deal. But they'd also probably go up from their $250 price, you know, and then that's getting pretty expensive. But if it's at the same price, that'd be really great. Like, but I would be interested in those if they got to that price, because they got great battery life. They could also improve, I think, if they wanted to, the case. The charging case. So, you know, one of the common complaints at the start was that it's just so bulky. Like, it's a big case. Not because it's got a big battery in it, but because it just needs to accommodate, you know, not tiny earbuds, but like, on ear, you know, around the ear headphones.
And there's no Qi charging on that case either.
No. So it was kind of awkward where AirPods finally got wireless charging, and then Power Beats set you back where you needed to use a cable. So you can't have like a dedicated pad for charging that, and it's also just a big case. So
we don't actually know yet whether the AirPods Studio are going to have a charging case on.
No, yeah, hopefully they have a dock or like a headphone stand that you can.
Yeah, like a stand probably makes sense. Like a full carry case would be a bit annoying. Like,
those are big.
Yeah, although they do give you, you know, that is. They do give you a lot of battery life, because you can just think, you know, if they do sit in, maybe what they probably all do. Is they'll probably have multiple accessories of different ways you can charge the things, right?
Yeah.
So they're probably not going to have a cable. They're probably going to be wireless to some capacity, whether that's like a charging stand at home, and then they'll have like the travel case, which also carry battery life in it, that you can buy for another $100, $150. You can carry around you and get an extra, you know, 72 hours or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were taking it on holiday, if you're taking your headphones on holiday, you could then leave the travel case in your luggage, right? And in your suitcase. But if you're just at home and just going out for the day or whatnot, you probably just need like a headphone stand that they can charge on, rather than like this big bulky case you have to constantly put it in and out of.
Yeah. And then finally, for the Power Beats Pro, like, back to one of the sort of case criticisms, is that it's really hard, if not impossible, to put your AirPods in and not charge them when the lid's closed, because it's just like a strong magnet. There's not much room to not be all the way at the bottom.
So you can't do it wrong.
Yeah. With Power Beats Pro, once you overcome the orientation of how they need to go in, you know, I'm not used to it, but it's possible. There's definitely a thing that I've seen multiple users, including myself, experience, which is that you've sometimes you need to kind of snap them into place more. Like, you can put them in, but they won't be making contact. You need to like snap the magnetic, you know, charger.
So they're like in the case, but they're not charging.
Yeah, it is possible to do that, whereas other parts you can't. So
that's awkward.
Yeah, and I think we kind of saw like in FCC documents, like the shape of these things shown, and there's no change there.
Yeah, it looks the same.
Yeah.
The name's not going to change. It's still going to be Power Beats Pro.
Yeah. Even if we saw the case be identical, I'd be very curious to try these to see if there's a difference in how they attach, you know, if it's just more secure.
Like, quality of life improvements.
Indeed.
One more AirPods Studio thing that's just a little tidbit. Mm-hmm. Felipe also says that Apple's going to offer equalizer settings.
Yeah.
Studio. So when you pair them to a Mac or an iOS device, there will be sound settings for low, medium, high frequency adjustments, which is something that we haven't seen them do on any of the other headphones. And I don't think the Beats headphones let you customize that either, right?
No, there's no like app for it or anything.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do, right? And even if you go into on the iPhone itself, you can change equalization for the music app, because there's EQ options in music settings. But for the phone in general, there's nothing. Like, there's no EQ options. So this would be a pretty big departure for them, and kind of plays into the idea that these, you know, AirPods Studio are going to be pretty like premium professional, right? So adding EQ options distances them from the normal AirPods lineup.
Put that on the HomePod Studio, formerly known as HomePod.
Yeah, the HomePod doesn't have EQ options either.
Yeah, the last thing with EQ, I think, really is the, well, I don't know, the iPod got, like, I think it got EQ for the iPod Hi-Fi. But I don't know if it was just what there is now for music. It might just be that.
Yeah, I think it just carried on, because obviously the iPod had the music EQ settings, which then were ported to the phone,
yeah.
and the iPod Hi-Fi just played whatever the iPod played, right? So if the iPod's EQ was set like that, then it would transfer to the Hi-Fi. Yeah. I don't think it was like separate options.
Right. I think that was added to the iPod for the Hi-Fi, and then it lives on through the music app today.
But not system-wide.
Right. It's just for the music app, yeah.
Classic. So,
yep. All right. Let's talk about Ming-Chi Kuo. He had a gigantic story about iPads this week, which I mean, man, my big takeaway here is that Apple's still changing the iPad lineup in terms of screen sizes and what it means to be an iPad, I guess. Give us a roundup of what are the new screen sizes that closest are coming and all of that.
Yeah, so as a reminder, right now we've got 10.2, which is 329, right?
Yes.
We've got 10.5, which is the iPad Air.
499.
And then you've got 11-inch, which is the small iPad Pro, and then you've got 12.9, which is the big iPad Pro.
And 9.7.
And then you've got the iPad Mini.
7.9.
7.9.
Yeah. 9.7's dead. 7.9's
dead. That got replaced by 10.2.
Yeah.
But it's close to 10.5, which is kind of close to 11. And you've got the 12.9 monster on the high end. So
price-wise, there are gigantic differences. The Mini is sort of premium at its size. But, you know, 330, 400, 500, 800, 1,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, price-wise, they're separated out. Screen size wise, they're all over the place. And to be fair, the iPhone had that problem as well, and still does, because at the moment you've got like the 6.1-inch iPhone is technically cheaper than the 5.8-inch iPhone, and we think maybe there's going to be some realignment of that this year with the new lineup where they're all OLED, and then you've got the 5.4-inch one, and then two 6.1-inch ones. But for the iPad, this latest Quo report suggests that the mayhem continues, because he says there's going to be a new 10.8-inch iPad during the second half of 2020. So the second half of this year, there'll be a new 10.8-inch, and then a new iPad Mini, or supposedly what we're thinking right now of iPad Mini, that's between 8.5 inches and 9 inches during the first half of 2021. So that'd be like springtime next year.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls these affordable and similar to the iPhone SE strategy of having, you know, cheaper price points and the latest processors.
So are these home button bezel on top and bottom?
It doesn't, the quote didn't specify, but yeah. The reference to the SE would suggest that they're not pros, right? With the modern design, it would seem like they're still bezeled home button products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's odd, right?
Yes.
It's like the iPad Mini, you could probably see it going to 8.5 inch to 9 inches if the bezels are getting smaller, right? Because you could almost probably fit that in the same product that there is now.
Because 7.9 is, you know, almost 8 inches. It's practically 8 inches.
Yeah, but it's not 8.5.
Yeah, but right. And so to go to 8.5
is... You could probably fit half an inch if you made the iPad Mini's bezel smaller.
Right. Nine inches, I mean, at that size, every half inch makes a lot of difference. And so 9 inches seems like a big departure. Like it's a different product.
Different form factor. Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. Because, like... It's like the diagonals are deceptive because, you know, the overall screen area gets huge. Like the difference between the 7.9 and 9.7 is like 50% change in screen area. But even though the diagonal dimensions only increase like 20%, so you always get caught up on that a little bit. It is weird because maybe the 10.8 inch is the new iPad Air. But would you really call that affordable? Because that's 500. Like, I don't know what Quo's standard for affordability is.
Well, it's half the price of a 12.9 inch.
It is half, yeah. But it's nowhere near as affordable as like the 329 iPad.
Yeah.
And then I think one thing you've got to keep in mind is that we do expect like a big turnover of the high-end line with all the mini LED stuff that's coming in, right? And we're expecting mini LED 11 inches, mini LED 12.9 inches. And so maybe Apple is just making all the iPad screens bigger, but the 10.8 inch will still seem low end because it won't be mini LED, it'll just be LCD, right? Mm-hmm. And that'll be more like what we see with the iPhone line at the moment, where you have the separation between OLED and LCD. And I think with mini LED coming in all over the board, there's going to be a lot of like tumult in just terms of the product range, because it's going to cause, you know, like the cheaper products, if they do get mini LED, they'll be more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bigger ones will be even more expensive. But then you could have like LCD screens that carry on that are technically bigger, but not, you know, but not as premium, if you know what I mean. So although these dimensions kind of come out left field, it is possible that they actually like line up in the end. It's like if Quo hadn't said it, obviously it'd be a lot more skeptical about it. But I think it can probably work. But we don't really have a clear vision yet on which of Apple's products are going to mini LED first. So we can't fully slot it in the jigsaw puzzle, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like 10.8 inches versus 10.2, if it's just a plain LCD screen, the cost difference to Apple is not that great for making it that much bigger. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think the cost of the high-end iPads is not really just the raw screen dimensions. It's like the quality of the screens, right? Where you've got, you know, the liquid retina stuff, you've got the very thin bezels on the sides. Even on the iPad Air, you have like True Tone and P3, where the base iPad 329 iPad doesn't. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's more where the cost difference is coming between the panels than just like, this one's 0.5 inches bigger than the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of this really doesn't address like what happens to the lineup today. So you could see an iPad mini at 7.9 inches. You know, it's not cheap right now, but you can see that go down in price, especially if they...
Well, then have an iPad mini Pro that's like a bit bigger.
Yeah. And you could see the 10.2 inch iPad staying around for a little while, you know, like... Surely the 10.5 inch one doesn't coexist with the 10.8 with an 11, but you know, we'll see what happens here. This at least gives us some excitement for what will happen with the overall iPad lineup, not just the Pro. And
people were saying the 10.5 inch was an ugly duckling already, right? Because it kind of slips between the two. So if they could get rid of the 10.5 inch and just have the 10.8, maybe that would sort people out. Like yeah. if they introduced the iPad Air last year and then realized that it wasn't actually a big seller because most people were either buying the Pros or they were buying the cheap ones, then it could possibly be sensible for them to just get rid of it and just only offer, you know, like a $350 iPad, which is 10.8 inches, slightly bigger.
Yeah. You know what I mean? The 10.5 inch iPad Air, which is effectively the body of the 10.5 inch iPad Pro, right?
So 2017. Yeah.
Right. I've never owned one or purchased one for somebody, but it's the idea of it's so nice because it's $500. It's the price of an iPad from day one. No cheaper, no more expensive, you know, and it works with the smart keyboard and the Apple Pencil. It's just that if I'm buying somebody an iPad, I'm probably going to go for the 329 one,
majority of the same things just for $150 less. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why it's kind of like stuck out in a weird angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so nice in theory, but in practice, I'm not sure where it belongs. And how. I guess I don't know. It's
kind of like the 12-inch MacBook in a way. Like, you know, we've definitely heard that as they rev the MacBook Air, the sales interest in the 12-inch went way down.
Yeah,
right, because it just kind of got squeezed out.
Yeah,
and maybe they're seeing the same effect with the iPad Air as well.
Yeah, I'll always argue on that if they just kept updating the 12-inch because it was unfair. Never.
Yeah, they did stack the deck against it. Yes.
Yeah,
that is also true.
Yep. And then Apple Glasses, right? Like this is still happening.
Yeah. So at the very end of this quote report, because you know these classic industry reports, he was talking about glass manufacturing and lamination,
yeah.
And so that's how they tied iPad with glasses. Because he was talking about the lamination of mini LED displays, LCD displays. And at the end, he said that the advanced manufacturing processes for the upcoming Apple Glasses will also be made by GIS, which is the lamination for the iPad Pro, same manufacturer as the iPad Pros. And Kuo says to not expect Apple Glasses to launch until 2022 at the earliest.
Okay.
So that's at least 2 years away.
Mark your calendars, but not in permanent marker because it will go back probably too.
Previously, Kuo had said that Apple would launch an AR headset in collaboration with a third-party brand in the summer of 2020. So we're almost there. Like he hasn't repeated that,
yeah.
Or so maybe he's just like faded away from that. But I still think that could actually happen. Like, and it just depends what the nature of the collaboration is, right? Like a third party company like HTC could release an MFI headset that works with the iPhone, and maybe for gaming, maybe some Apple Arcade games. But the thing that we're all thinking of when we think Apple Glasses is the, like, you know, Apple AR headset experience, like the modern version of Google Glass, where you can just walk around with this thing in your face and it, like, projects stuff onto the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that still seems like something that they're definitely working on. And obviously, they acquired NextVR, like we talked about at the start of the show. But the current state of the art of technology still seems not ready enough for them to actually bring a viable product to market that isn't you know, gigantic and also has long enough battery life to actually be useful for, you know, meaningful periods of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Less 2022, not ridiculous, I'd say.
2020s.
Maybe even later.
2020s in this decade. Unless it will not go like with a car. With a car was just, I think we're done with that now.
I did it. Well, yeah, the car's even more on, like, I think what happened with the car is that Apple wanted to make a car, and then like Johnny Ive's team kind of got carried away. And so they started designing all of this hardware, all of this like cool little, how the handles work, how the steering wheel would look, how the doors would open. And then someone was like, wait, do we actually know we can actually do this car autonomously yet or not? And then they like sent this crack team off, and then it came back and was like, yeah, you know, this autonomous driving part of the equation, that's going to take a decade to work out. Not, you know, it's not in the foreseeable future. So all this hardware development and design, let's just put that on the hold for now and we'll come back to it eventually. And so that's where I think the state of the car project is, because obviously they're still working on the autonomous driving algorithms and the sensing. But I don't think they're working on the hardware side at all at the moment. They're just, you know, R&D on autonomous driving. And then so eventually, you know, maybe a decade away or 5 to 10 years at least, when a car can reasonably drive on its own for, you know, at least in a city, right? Like, I don't think it has to be to the point where the car can drive anywhere in the world freely on its own. But you need it to be able to do like an inner city unattended, right? So you could, for Apple to really have something like compelling to sell, because, you know, even the state of the art of like autopilot and Tesla today, you still have to be it is not advanced enough that legally they still have to tell you to be alert to the road and you have to have your hands on the steering wheel the whole time, right?
Like, yeah,
and that's all right and that's fine, it's a nice little bonus for electric cars. But if Apple's really getting to this space, I think they want to be at the point where they can literally tell someone, get in this car and you don't have to drive and it will drive itself. And that goal is still many years away.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Apple News audio article. So this is funny because you heard something in this field, let's say earlier this year, right?
Yeah, about March time.
Okay. Yeah. And now there's a new report out that kind of goes on what you were hearing. And the idea is that it's probably part of the News Plus product, right? Like, it's not Apple News for free where it's aggregated and everything, but it's when you pay, what do you get for the product when you pay for it? And it seems to be that part of that solution would be, you know, spoken audio versions of what you'd see in a magazine or read in a newspaper. But if you prefer audio, then this is what you'll get. And then it won't just be like me or you reading it. It'll be recognizable voices.
Yeah. So what I heard in March was that Apple was talking with Apple News Plus partners for, because obviously around March time was when they were doing the renewals for their deals, right? Because they were on 1 year deals and Apple News launched last March. So it was all coming up to the 1 year renewal period. And as part of the negotiations on continuing the program, Apple was bringing forward what it wants to do to expand the platform. So one of the things they were talking about was this audio articles thing. And that's both in terms of agreeing the new financial deals and also just in terms of keeping the publishers on the platform. Because obviously some publishers have been unhappy with the success of News Plus, or, you know, the lack of success of it. So by Apple kind of like hanging these morsels of new features on the horizon, they're like, stay around, we're going to drive more engagement by doing this and this. And one of these things is audio articles. And what I'd heard is basically Apple was saying, give us the permission to record, to get actors and famous names to record articles from the News Plus magazines, and we'll offer audio versions of the stories as well. And what DigiDay reports in this story is that originally Apple just wanted like unlimited unilateral rights to basically make audio of anything it wanted. That turns out to be a bit more complicated in real life, because a lot of the magazine's content is written by like freelancers who have separate contracts, and you're not allowed to legally just reproduce that same material in an audio form without, you know, maybe compensating them again or getting their agreement and stuff. So now it seems like what the arrangement will be is that each of the magazines that are in News Plus will be able to pitch Apple on upcoming stories and stuff of like flagship reporting. And then Apple will be able to go, you know, okay, well, this is good. This one's good. We're going to go and produce it. Or this one, no, we're not going to bother with, right? And who knows what the product or how many they're going to do per month or whatever. But it seems like, you know, on a fairly regular basis, they're going to get audio articles recorded, these things. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get, you know, famous names that you would have heard of. It's not going to be like, you know, some anonymous voiceover artist, right, who would do a perfectly good job of reading the story out, but part of the appeal was getting the celebrity backing to, like, you know, enunciate it. Kind of like audiobooks, right? And people love audiobooks that are either written by the author, or they're written by a big, or they're voiced by a big celebrity, rather than just like audiobook voiced by someone they've never heard of. Like, mm-hmm. that's just the reality, right? Like, it's not like a car ad where you just have this voice that you're not meant to know who's speaking over the top of it. Like, people want to hear and have a connection to the person. And so that seems what they're driving towards. And Apple will be handling all of the production and the production costs. So it won't be on the publishers to actually, like, Apple's not telling these magazine publishers to stay in News Plus. You've got to go and now find all these actors to record your stories. It's just like, you tell us which stories you think are good and we'll go get them recorded for you. Yeah. So they're, you know, they're taking on the production burden and the organization and the cost of actually getting everything recorded. And then it will appear in News Plus somehow, presumably alongside with the original stories. And then maybe there'll be a separate feed as well where you can just get like the audio update and just tune into it. This isn't in the reporting, but I'd be surprised if there wasn't some kind of like Apple Podcast integration here. So you'd like open the podcast app, and one of the things you can subscribe to is the Apple News update or something. And then it will combine all of the recorded audio snippets and all the audio articles into one feed that you can listen to on your commute or whatever.
Yeah.
And if they do that, that also gives them an opportunity to put a subscribe to News Plus button inside of the podcast app, which I'm sure they can't wait to do because they want to, you know, they want to monetize that application. And I'm sure at some point they will start doing premium podcasts on their own as well. But this is a way to give podcasts more content, exclusive content from Apple, and also promote Apple News Plus in general, which it could, you know, need.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk and preparation about podcasts having some original content from Apple, like you see from Spotify, from Audible, from different podcast providers. And so, you know, that seems to be still coming in the future, maybe, you know, maybe this year, maybe next year. But that would fit in nicely. As someone who really enjoys listening to a podcast after reading all week, this is compelling. This is like a reason to pay for News Plus, because it's not just the same content in a different format that's, you know, in some ways inferior, because it's frustrating to navigate, you know, more than so than a magazine or just like, I don't know, the website. But to have this be exclusive, like you can only get this high production celebrity sort of endorsed, you know, by the reading, version of a story, then it's like, okay, that's a different product that didn't exist before in this way. This conveniently, you know, and then you've also got whatever, you know, everything else that exists with News Plus. But News Plus right now, I mean, the pricing is so uncomfortable compared to like what you get with Arcade or TV Plus, you know, $10 instead of $5. You know, it's the same price as all of Apple Music. It's tough for what it is right now. And especially if like something that you like one magazine you want to read that publishes every 2 months, and you know, it's $20 for that issue. This would be compelling. My big takeaway is that is additive and not just a different way of presenting the same information. Mm-hmm. Although it is a different way of presenting the same information. It's just you know.
Yeah, I might as well reel off what else I heard from this same source that I couldn't confirm, which is why we never covered it originally. As well as the audio article stuff, Apple is also promising publishers new feeds and different layouts and different presentations of their articles to hopefully give the stories more exposure. What I'd heard is that while most of the magazine companies are not very happy with the amount of, because obviously in News Plus land, the amount of readership converts the amount of money they make, because they take that $9.99, 50% of it stays with Apple, and then the other 50% is shared amongst all the magazines based on which ones are being read, like based on time spent with those brands, essentially. And what I've heard, at least from this person, which may have a biased view of the matter, I should say that, because only from one place, he was basically saying that the publishers of magazines are unhappy with monetization and they're not getting enough interest, but the newspapers, like the Wall Street Journal, for instance, they were actually quite pleased with the income they were getting from News Plus, because actually Apple's doing a good job of promoting all the newspapers in the news app. And so they're getting the vast majority of taps, which then means they're getting the vast majority of the money at the end of the day, right? So the biggest share of that 50% slice is going towards the newspapers. And so the newspapers are relatively happy at the moment with how the service is going. But, you know, the 300 other magazines in there are not getting an eye in. So they're basically making no money out of it, which explains some of the conflicting views we keep hearing from different ports. What about, you know, some people saying, oh, this is going fine. Other people saying it's horrendous. Like this DigiDay report says that monetization has been quote unquote horrendous. And so I think it's like a mixture and a combination. And Apple's trying to kind of levy out the balance a bit with these upcoming updates. And then the other thing I'd heard is that Apple may be doing, so they're doing this audio thing, but they may also be doing a video production as well. So it'd be kind of like a video podcast news update as well. So maybe, you know, once a day or once a week, they would then do like a 20-minute feature of all the, you know, these are the top headlines. Here's some cool editorials that we've had on News Plus this week. And obviously you can then click through and read them in full. And maybe that would obviously appear inside the news app, but then maybe they'd have like a channel on the TV app as well, where you could see like the news update. Those plans seem further off. The audio article stuff I probably expect to be announced with iOS 14. So you should see that next month.
Turns out audio is easier than video, and you know, even if it's the same thing. Someone tipped us a few weeks ago, I think, that there were new newspapers.
Yeah, like the Houston Chronicle joined.
Yeah, Houston Chronicle, yeah. San Francisco Chronicle, and San Antonio Express News were the three new papers. So, and you know, because there are so few newspapers, it was what, LA Times and Wall Street Journal at first, and yeah. So adding in the US at least, and so adding
and then when they added the UK, they added the Telegraph.
Yeah, and so adding three in the US, you know, in different areas is notable. Especially if that's what's performing well as a newspapers.
Well, then maybe by adding more newspapers, the journal will be less happy because then they're not going to capture all of the newspaper interest. You see what I mean? Then it's going to start being diluted.
True. That's like, true. Yeah.
I think that's a problem just in general with the Apple News strategy, is that it's going to be most of that $5 money is going to be captured by very few publications, and the rest are going to be like fighting over scraps. Mm-hmm. And so there may be some, like part of the renegotiations in March are about maybe there can be different terms on who's getting paid in what way, if you know what I mean. But I don't know how those talks are going.
It seems like it would be great if Apple didn't take half, and or they lowered the price by 20% and they took 20% less. Yeah.
They sold it for $7.99 and they only took $3.99 of the original total. And that is something where if they do bundle this up, which they probably are going to do at some point, that's one place where they can drop their margin, right? Because they can offer the same service 50% less and just make no money on it. If they bundle it together, then they can make some profit on the overall bundle price, but they can, you know, drastically reduce the amount they're getting on that individual service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because like Arcade is $5 because Apple funds and all the production of all the games, so they can charge whatever they want for it, essentially. Same with TV. But then news, they have these like fixed deals with the partners. Music's only $9.99 a month for individual because the music industry got completely screwed over when everyone started transitioning to streaming music. And now no one else wants to be in that boat. So that's why you only get 300 magazines for $9.99, whereas the music industry, you get 60 million songs for $9.99. Yeah. So that's kind of the state they're in and the pickle they're in. But I believe the music deals, Apple only gets about 15% of that $9.99. Like once you distribute everything out to the labels and the producers and the writers, they only get about 50% of that $10 price. But obviously in News Plus, they're getting 50% of that amount, which still seems high even to this day. But that was the deal with Texture. So when Texture was around, before Apple was involved at all, Texture would keep half of it and the rest of the other half would be.
And the reason it seems better with Texture is that that was their whole business, and with Apple it's not.
Yes, exactly. You know? Like, for Apple to take half of like a subdivision of their company seems insane, especially when all of these publishers are just complaining they're not making enough money out of it. Like if everyone was sitting pretty making, you know, nice cash piles, then you know it would be harder to criticize. But as it stands, you know, Apple's the one making half the money of everything that's getting plowed into the service, where all of the people providing the content in that service are complaining that they can't monetize it well enough.
Mm-hmm. And Texture was owned by some of the publishers, at least, right?
Like, yep.
So it was money coming back to, you know, it was less, we're doing this thing, we're going to let you participate as well. Yeah,
I definitely think pricing is something that they may change, especially in terms of the bundle offering. Like, who knows what these negotiations are going on like, but you can imagine going to like, look, X magazine, we're going to bundle this at the end of the year, and when we bundle it, you know, our effective share of the pie will only be $1 versus $5 of your $10 earnings, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to wait for that to play out.
All right, and finally, we'll wrap up with some iPhone 12 rumors that are just absolutely true. They cannot be false. These are solid. you describe these as half sketchy. Which half is sketchy and which half is legit?
Yeah, so these come through Everything Apple Pro on YouTube, who's reporting information from Max Weinberg. And I call it half sketchy because I feel like half of Weinberg's information never comes true and half of it's, like, correct, right?
Okay.
And in general, the half that does come true is the stuff that you could probably, like, kind of half guess anyway. Do you know what I mean? So I wouldn't treat it with the same level as, like, assuredness as you a Quo story, right? But it is not just, like, some random person on the internet. He does have a history, and generally it's all right. Basically, the core of his story is that the iPhone 12 line, so remember, you've got the 5.8-inch, the 6.1-inch, and then you've got another 6.1-inch, and you've got the 6.7-inch, right?
Of course.
And he's saying that the pro line of that group, so the high-end 6.1-inch and the high-end 6.7-inch, will be getting exclusive features that the lower-end doesn't have. So right now, obviously, the iPhone 11 kind of has all the features of the iPhone 11 Pro, apart from the one camera lens, right? And so carrying on to this year, they're all going to... there's still going to be a split of cameras, but the big new feature that's going to be exclusive to the Pro line is ProMotion. So his big claim basically is that the 6.1-inch and the 6.7-inch models will be able to get 120Hz refresh rate displays, and they'll still be OLED and everything, whereas the lower end of the lineup won't get that. And obviously everyone's been hoping for ProMotion for a long time coming to the phone, and a lot of Android competition has started having high refresh rate displays, you know, across 2019, to be fair. And so it's kind of time for Apple to join the party. And it seems like they're going to offer it at least on the higher end two models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which would be cool.
For you, ProMotion is a reason to upgrade too, from what I gather.
Yeah, ProMotion is really cool. Yeah. Like, and it feels so different. The iPads just feel so smooth and responsive compared to the phones. Because
and you don't have a ProMotion device, do you?
I don't, because I don't want to be too annoyed by it. Because the problem for me is, my family has a ProMotion iPad, so okay. I definitely use that, and yeah. I've been very, very generous over, very jealous of it. But like, I want ProMotion laptops, I want ProMotion phones, I want, you yeah. know, I would just want everything in one package.
Like Retina,
kind of,
yeah.
Kind of like Retina for me, where, you know, once you have one, you can't really go back, if you know what I mean. So I've been trying to hold off until I can at least get, like, the phone, it comes to the phones, and it's just taken them longer, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, and then potentially having a wider angle Face ID.
He described it as just like not a big change, but no, so you still wouldn't be able to go like 90 degrees
yeah.
and be like directly top down, but it would be wider than what it is today.
Yeah. And then
and finally, quite interestingly, the zoom lens, so the telephoto lens, is apparently getting upgraded to 3x.
That really interests me. I love that.
Yeah, so right now it's 0.5x, which is the ultra-wide. Then you have the 1x camera, and then you have the double 2x camera. According to Weinberg's information, it'll be upgraded to a 3x optical zoom. This is in a marketplace where you have a lot of Android competition, like Huawei and Samsung, offering optical zooms of like 10x. So I guess 3x is achievable for Apple.
Yeah, and it would be the first change to the optical zoom since the iPhone 7 Plus introduced 2X. So the 7 Plus introduced 2X, the 8 Plus kept 2X, the 10 in the same year had 2X, 10S, 11 Pro, and...
Yeah, with the 11 series, obviously, they added the ultra-wide lens.
Yeah. So you've had a half X instead of additional X.
Yeah,
but going further, I mean, this is awesome. Like, I've got an affordable, you know, under $100 telescope, and it's got 70x zoom. And then there's like an iPhone adapter or a smartphone adapter, and I use that with 2x to take essentially 140x photo of the moon, and it's so cool. It's like a phone. Wow, you can see more detail than you ever could before. And to triple that with a phone is really cool. I would love that. And there's so many times, like, I use the heck out of 2X. Like, I use all three cameras. but if I had to pick between ultra wide and 2X, it would be 2X. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could agree with that. Like, mm-hmm. I think ultra wide is fun, but it also feel the main problem with the ultra wide camera at the moment is that it's lower quality, right?
Yeah, it's just in low light.
Ultra wide, yeah, low light is worse. It's more grainy, and just you have to be basically outside taking a big landscape to actually get an ultra wide photo.
On the iPad, it's really useful because just the way that the wide camera is, the ultra wide is like almost like, okay, this is what I expected to see, you know, without going
right.
way back.
Yeah. Whereas on the phone, I feel like ultra wide's best times or when you're just like outside looking at a big scene. And previously in those situations, you could kind of get the same result by just doing a panorama. And obviously it's not quite as good as just taking out a slap in the picture and you have to go
and stitch it together the right way, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but at least you get close, right? Whereas the zoom lens is, you know, there's so many times where you literally cannot get any closer to something and you just need to zoom in and the iPhone can save you.
Yeah. Can you see on the iPhone? Can you see all your ultra wide pictures together? I'm looking right now, but top of your head.
That is a good question. Cause there's a smart album for panoramas.
Yeah. Which is really like
there's not a smart album for zoom, right? Like,
no,
so you can't see like a 2X. You can't see with a 2X pictures.
I think
I'm pretty sure they're not.
Yeah. I think on the Photos app, you could do on the Mac,
Smart filter thingy.
Yeah. Create a smart album and say, let's see. So photo is what it says that the camera is. Camera model is maybe. And say includes or we'll say is. But even that, it's just like we say iPhone 11 Pro. So that's going to be all the pictures there.
The EXIF data definitely records which camera it's taken with. So yeah. It could, like, you know, some software theoretically could filter it. But
yeah.
Definitely on the phone, it's not exposed.
Yeah. I'm looking at just the iPhone 11 Pro pictures and look at these. And, you know, as we suspected, here's an ultra wide picture. I was like up close to a building and it had the word hope with a heart written on it. And I wanted to like get the whole landscape. It wasn't a great picture because it was at night and, you know, but
that is proving the point. Like,
yeah,
I think if the ultra wide camera was as good a quality as the normal cameras, then it would be a much more hard decision. But as it stands, the ultra wide is just kind of like the run of the litter.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if the 12 can add like night mode to the other lenses and stuff like that as well, rather than just the main one.
Yeah. So some of my favorite ultra wide ones are like pets up close, like right on their nose, you know.
Is that because it's like artistic though, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like otherwise it wouldn't be a picture, I think. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's you get the full face plus the environment versus just like, you know, not a picture that would work. So, but yeah, it's funny on the iPad though. Like I mentioned, like it's like, oh, that's really close up, you know, with the main camera, and then you know half out, and then it's like that's like a full frame, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else this week, Mayo?
I think that's good.
Nice. Okay. My only promotion this week is that for spaceexplored.com that I do on the side for space news and history, I recorded, because of what we're doing with Happy Hour now with video, it's given me a new comfort with doing video in general and just as a podcast, you know, way to do things. And so I recorded an interview with my friend Alex Orfanos, where we talked about kind of what we're excited about in space right now and things coming up. And so that's on just my personal YouTube channel. I'll put a link in the show notes for it, though, if you want to check it out. We scheduled 30 minutes and we went on for an hour and a half. So it was, you know, the typical podcast. But yeah, and I had fun with that. Like in scheduling it, I didn't know what I would do with it. If it just be like transcribe it, make it like a, you know, an interview kind of thing. But it was just naturally a podcast based on what me and you do. And I did the whole thing with iMovie. It was a Zoom call in the iMovie. And I did like bumper music and everything. And it's a legitimate, you know, podcast if it were just to be the audio only. But for the video, it's even better because there's, you know, pictures and stuff too. So, all right. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @ApolloZachBenjamin. You're on Twitter at
BZAMAO.
And if you have any feedback for the show, you can email us together at happyhour@9to5mac.com. If you haven't seen the video version of Happy Hour and you want to check it out, that's on 9to5mac.com/YouTube or youtube.com/9to5mac. I think both of those will work. We'll take you there. And we post that usually a little bit after the audio goes out. So, you know, check for that over the weekend. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody. Hey, I am Zach Hall of 9to5Mac.com, and relevant to this podcast or video or whatever it becomes, maybe it's a TV show, maybe it's an IMAX movie. Relevant to this is spaceexplorer.com. So that's a space news and history website that I've been building for the past few months. And today not really a guest because we're just doing this thing, hanging out. Today I'm hanging out with Alex Orfanos. And he's got the Today in Space podcast on Apple Podcasts and on YouTube and Spotify. And Alex is recently a guest on your podcast. We met together at the NASA social for the SpaceX CRS-19 mission. And today we're here to talk about a number of things, including the Demo 2 mission, which is just historic in all kinds of ways. But Alex, introduce yourself better than I could, and we'll go from there.
Sure. My name is Alex Orfanos. I went to school for aerospace engineering, didn't really find my place in there. Just started a podcast one day because I was at home still finishing up my degree, and I found that I can talk nonstop about space. So podcasting just seemed to come natural.
Yeah. Like, can you talk space? Well, am I awake or not? Yes.
So yeah, that was like 5 years ago now. And okay. We're almost at episode 200. So I just basically wanted to keep myself relevant with some kind of experience because I couldn't find a job in aerospace. And then found out I was better at just communicating science than necessarily doing the science, although I'm pretty good at that. But, you know, this is where I find myself. And we met down in Florida, and that was an amazing time. That was my first rocket launch. And as weird as that sounds for going to school for it and that being your first, but this is where I am now.
And we had this crossover of it's your first launch is my first launch, but you've got this depth of knowledge and I've got this like high level interest, but don't know anything. Mm-hmm. And since then, so my 9to5Mac background is covering Apple news, technology news, that kind of thing. And I've had some really cool experiences there, like going to Apple events and going to different events where like the CEO Tim Cook is speaking, getting a review unit. It's like I'm very engaged in that world, and you know, I can relay it all from the back of my, you know, back of my head. It's nothing. This is different because it is challenging, but I'm engaged enough that it's so interesting that it feels good to soak in more, and like none of it feels like work. It's all just like candy. And we spoke on your podcast about that experience and how you were kind of like the catalyst for like, you know, by the way, there's a launch today, but the thing I was looking for before we went to the launch was, what's the purpose of the launch? Like, why are they doing this one? I didn't even know how frequent they were or anything like that. It was just like, I'm going to do a launch because launches are cool. Rockets are cool, but why rocket? Why launch it? They did a good job at NASA Social of kind of teaching us, exposing us to the people involved, which is awesome. But then you zoom way out, and it's that it was the 19th. Now there have been 20 of those so far. It's a contract complete. There's not just SpaceX launching. There's many, many, many launches around the world, whether it's in China or in Russia, in more countries coming soon, in the U.S. And there's even been like New Zealand from the U.S. company. So it's really, really cool stuff. But you've been the catalyst for me for that. And since then, I took that spark that you created, NASA Social created, and I, you know, kind of wanted just to like journal my experience, just like you, where you want to stay up to date on what's happening. Me too. Like, and so Space Explored is kind of like my reading list of things I've saved for later, and then like want to go and digest, and then, you know, want to give like just my notes to myself. If nobody else read it, I would be perfectly happy. This is me explaining to myself, and I'll go back and read it and be like, that's neat. That's cool. I don't remember that, but you know, and is that like, is it the same thing? Is that the same for you with your podcast with Today in Space?
That's how it started off.